I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Chicago!
Woo! 3 titles in 6 years. Yes, it is worth cheering for.
Alex DeBrincat got to the forehand. Alex DeBrincat. Oh, winner!
Welcome into a very special edition of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And it's a very special edition because for the first time since we've been doing this show, we have not only one, but 2 Chicago Blackhawk players to talk about who were just inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame here on Wednesday afternoon. But before we dive into all that, I want to introduce the 2 other people who are with me. It's my 2 usual line mates. And up first, we have the analytics darling of Second City Hockey. It is Shepherd Price.
Hi, just like Jeremy Roenick, I'll never be a Hall of Famer.
What?
It's true. It's true. I think this is probably the year he would have made it, and he did not make it.
Yeah, I guess he has been out of the game. I mean, Kevin Lowe made it after, 20, 30 years? I feel like Roenick's going to end up in at some point.
I don't know, because there's a lot of great wingers coming up after, this year.
Well, he's a center, though.
I mean, Jeremy Roenick was a center?
He's got 1,200.
There's even more great centers coming up.
He should be in just for his NHL 94 contributions alone. But he had 1,200 points, 500 goals. I mean,
if there was a video game Hall of Fame, yes, he should be in. I don't think he'll make it into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I think you're crazy, but stranger things have happened. Roenick's up to what? I'm scrolling down the list of all time points. He's 45th all time in points. He's got to get in eventually. He'll get it.
The other thing is that he's just going to keep getting passed.
Yeah. He'll get in. I'm confident he's going to get in. He's not the only Blackhawk from that era in the Hall of Fame, as we will be discussing later. But before we do that, I want to introduce the other person with us right now, and that is Brandon Kane.
Hey, I feel like Roenick might get into the Hockey Hair Hall of Fame, though.
Yeah.
Can confirm.
I'll accept that.
Because, I mean, Dave and I don't have any room to talk on that, but...
No, we do not.
Roenick's got some hair that we would be A-okay with having.
I would, yeah. If I was ever going to have hair again, I would not mind having Jeremy Roenick's hair, but, that's not what I was given. That's not the cards I was dealt in life, so, oh well. I guess we'll just have to...
I would just, wash it better than he does, but that's a little too inside there, but...
All right, well, I guess let's not just
we don't have our usual opening tangent because we actually have hockey things to talk about, and I'm very excited to talk about this because I think we've mentioned this in recent podcasts where anytime we get to talk about Marian Hossa is a good time, and we're just going to talk about Marian Hossa a ton tonight because he is officially a first ballot Hall of Famer today after being one of the six people, I believe it was, inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame today. The announcement came down 3:30. Landon McDonald read it. I was watching it on TV. The class also includes, and I want to make sure I'm Googling this real quick so I make sure I don't have anybody wrong, but it's we have Kevin Lowe. We have Jarome Iginla. We have Kevin Lowe, Jarome Iginla, Marian Hossa, Ken Holland, Doug Wilson, also a former Blackhawk, and then we also have Kim St. Pierre, who is a was the woman's goalie for Team Canada for many a year. So obviously we're not too concerned about St. Pierre, Lowe, or Iginla, or even Ken Holland. And we're going to get to Doug Wilson later on in this episode. But right now, we're just going to say as much great stuff as we can about Marian Hossa. And Shepard Price, I'll go to you first. What was your reaction when you found out this news?
So yesterday I built the case against Marian Hossa and the case for, and like, while he definitely has a Hall of Fame case, I was not prepared for him to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But the fact that he's in my sports fandom, he's like the first of my favorite players to make it. And like, there'll be guys after him, but like, it's a great feeling watching one of your guys go into the Hall of Fame, and knowing that Hossa is a Hall of Famer now is just, it's a fantastic feeling.
Brandon Kane, what about you?
Yeah, Hossa was one of the guys on the Senators, like during my early hockey fandom, that I was like, yeah, this dude is a dude. Like him and Daniel Alfredson, I was like, yes, I can get behind that. So it was kind of cool to like follow his career and then be like, oh, why you got to be on the Penguins? Oh, now you have to be in Detroit. Oh, fuck you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you hated him for a year.
Right? Which was very odd. But then when he came to Chicago, I was like, here we go. Like, this is the real deal for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when he signed with the Blackhawks, that was the official sign to the rest of the league that they're not fucking around anymore, that something real is about to go down now that Marian Hossa is on board. And even – and it's still crazy to think about that when he came to the Blackhawks, he still had that moniker of being a postseason choker, of being, kind of like Jarome Iginla, because Iginla never won the Cup. But just being a guy who couldn't get over that final hurdle after losing with Pittsburgh and then going to Detroit and losing to Pittsburgh, you know, it was so crazy to think how long he had that moniker, because he played 12 seasons in the NHL before he came to Chicago. And then he played another 8 years with the Blackhawks. I think that's the most fascinating thing, is he had what anybody would have – I think anybody that had made professional hockey and it had the 12 years that Marian Hossa had to start his career and then retired, would have been perfectly content, well, mostly content, with how they performed and how they did. And then he had a whole another 8 years after that. And that's the most unfathomable thing to me, was how long he was in the NHL and how good he was for so long. Because up until his very last season, he was still playing top 6 minutes, making top six contributions, and the Blackhawks still haven't replaced him 3 years later.
Also, we omitted the part that he spent 3 seasons with the Atlanta Thrashers. Very important.
I was actually going to make a joke about, do you guys think he'll wear an Atlanta Thrashers jersey at the induction ceremony? Just because I thought that would be funny. But
that's where he had his best season.
It is. And all of 2,000 people watched it every night because it was hockey in Atlanta at the time. Yeah, and the 06-07 season, is that the one you're referring to, Shepard?
Yeah, the 100-point season.
Yeah, in the dead puck era, 4-3 goals and 57 assists. Well, maybe like just after – or no, that was dead puck era. That was right out of the lockout when everything was pretty boring.
Yeah, and that was with Ilya Kovalchuk on the thing. I think our other wing.
Yeah. There, I just saw a picture of somebody posted on Twitter of Kovalchuk and Hossa standing next to each other at the All-Star game. Kovalchuk number 17, Hossa number 18, and you wonder how, like, the Thrasher teams were okay, and you wonder how they weren't better with those two guys on the roster, just because those are two, I wouldn't call them generational, those are two Hall of Fame talents. Covey's not in yet, but I'm sure he'll get there eventually. with his how good of a career he has had, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not only in the NHL but also overseas. So I assume he'd get in. Two genuine Hall of Fame talents on your roster, and they made the playoffs and got swept out by the Rangers 1 year. But we're not here to talk about Kovalchuk. We're going to talk about Hossa. And I guess, Shepard, Brandon, if either one of you guys want to go, just what are some of your fond Marian Hossa memories or Marian Hossa things, or just what other thoughts and ideas do you have about this first ballot Hall of Fame induction ceremony for Marian Hossa?
Him lifting the cup first after Taves in 2010 is probably like the official start, I guess, of the Blackhawks reign. Because Taves was injured and couldn't really do a full skate, but then Hossa having it, mm-hmm. that's like the first like symbol we remember of like the Blackhawks like dominance.
And that's, there's one thing I wanted to add before we get too much into like talking about memories and such like that. But yeah, you're right. Like that was, I remember when they won that first cup, like you always know who the first guy is that the captain's going to hand the cup off to. And it was so obviously going to be Marian Hossa. He was like standing behind Taves in wait for that. And I think they let him take a skate a little bit because he'd waited so long to lift it. But I think we all knew Hossa was going to be a Hall of Famer. I think the first ballot-ness was kind of questionable. I think we all agreed that he had a shot, but I don't know. There was some part of me that I guess didn't think he was going to be the first ballot Hall of Fame induction. But this is, I think, validation that what we saw for the last 8 years with the Blackhawks and then the last 20 years of his entire career, it's kind of validation that, yes, that was greatness personified on the ice every single time you watched him play. The fact that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer kind of confirms what we were all thinking as we were watching him play.
Yeah. And also, like, he's one of the best takeaway artists in the history of the game.
Yeah, the takeaway to giveaway ratio, and you mentioned this in your article today, Shepard, when you were laying out the argument for him. And it's, I don't know how great that stat is with that. Well, they didn't start tracking it until 07, 08. So this is the back half of Hossa's career. So, I mean, when Hossa was in his prime, I could only imagine what the numbers were. But his career ratio was 577 takeaways to 278 giveaways. That's over a 2-to-1 ratio. And again, the back half of his career, like in 2011, 2012, it was 94-29, which is just silly. Like that's absurd on a takeaway to giveaway ratio for any hockey player. Like I feel like Pavel Datsyuk's probably the only guy that could rival those numbers.
Right. And, so one of the things that'll be said about Hossa for all time, and like is said about another Hall of Famer, I'll make this case. Brad Park is always referred to as like the best defenseman never to win the Norris. I think Marian Hossa is, and Brad Park went to the Hall of Fame. I think Marian Hossa is the best forward never to win the Selke, and he went to the Hall of Fame. And I went again. Him winning the Selke is not a result of any of his play. It's the result of, if anything, the voters. And like I made the case in the piece, but. He deserves Taves's Selke, and he probably deserves one of Pavel Datsyuk's.
Yeah, the way they wore the Selke, it's like it's so much off of reputation because there's not really a great way to measure defense. Some of the analytics and statistics that are coming out now, it's certainly getting easier and better to do, but I don't think it's as universally accepted among whoever's doing that voting as it is. It's still not universally accepted enough to make it a viable thing that people are going to consult when they're making those decisions. I mean, for 5 years in the 2000s, it was just, let's give it to Jari Lehtinen every year because he's got a really good defensive reputation. Now it's like, which guy plays on the penalty kill a lot and scores 40 goals at the same time? It's a very bizarre award with the way they hand it out, and it seems like they always have to give it to a center because apparently wings don't play defense, which I think Hossa proved all of that wrong. So, yeah, it's like he was always – I don't want to say he was never great because he was a great hockey player and then you get into the labels and all that, but like he was always in like the top 10% of the league. He may not have been in the top 1% for too long, maybe a couple seasons when he was in his mid-late 20s. But he stayed in that top 10% for what, like 15, 16 years? And that alone should be enough to get you into the Hall of Fame. Brandon, you've been off the quiet. Do you have any other thoughts about Marian Hossa? We're just sitting here talking about him because it's so much more fun to talk about him than anything else in the hockey world right now.
I think with Hossa, the big thing is that two-way game and his compete level. It was noticeable night in and night out, and that's why just universally he was a well-liked player, because you knew he was going to be a high-impact player on both ends of the ice. And then you add on to the fact that he was one of those players chasing a cup, and for it to be the third time with a third team in a row, it just was so storybook. And then Chicago just went on this run, and it was so evident how vital he was to the team's success, not only with the top players, but the players that worked their way into the lineup. And you could see that they rubbed off on him. You know, Brandon Saad's a prime example of that.
Right.
It's just, you slide into the lineup, okay, I see similarities in his game, and then it just kind of manifests. And then what Sheppard said about the takeaways, it seemed like the more his career went on, Hossa took more pride in his defensive game and taking the puck away than he did scoring goals.
I mean, but even like late in his career, Hossa remained fantastic at scoring goals.
Yeah, I mean, he scored, well, I think like 26 goals in 73 games this last season, which is probably around a 30-goal pace if you'd play the full 82. But yeah, like he never – like I think to Brandon's point about how he really – he really doubled down on defense in the back half of his career just because he knew, like, you can always play defense. You can always come back on a back check. Sometimes as you get a little older, get into your – you know, he was 38 in his last season in Chicago. Sometimes that little extra spark you need to create, that little bit of space to get you enough room for a shot on goal, may not be there anymore. But you can still be a nuisance on the back check, and obviously Hossa proved he could do that. I mean, his takeaway to giveaway ratio his last season, still 47 to 29, and I'm sure the majority of Blackhawks on that team were in the negative column. So there's that, but I kind of go back to what I originally said about this being validation that, you know, everything we thought we saw over the last 10, 15 years was legit. But it was also there's just something about, like, Marian Hossa. You never heard a bad story about him. I've never met the guy personally, so I can't speak to his personality or how he's off the ice. But have any of you ever heard a bad story about Marian Hossa ever?
No. And it's also – I think because he's just – such a quiet dude. Like, he just quietly retired to like a castle in Slovakia.
Yeah,
and that's what he's been doing. that's what that man's been doing. Like,
yeah, it feels like Marian Hossa was just a good guy who happened to be really, 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 really good at hockey. And it just puts a smile on your face. Just anytime anybody says Marian Hossa, you're just, it's a good way to start a conversation. Just walk up to people and say, "Hey, Marian Hossa," and see where it goes. We do have two quotes from him that are rolling in. Apparently they're doing a conference call of some sort, but Marian Hossa on his election to the Hockey Hall of Fame, it says, "This is an amazing day for me and my family. I'd like to congratulate all the six people with me. It's an amazing day for everybody." Of course, Hossa's congratulating other people. That's just who Marian Hossa is. He continues saying, "My dream came true when I won the first Stanley Cup. This is definitely something special to be in the top players and the people in the NHL. This means so much to me. I'm humbled and really grateful." Probably exactly what you would expect Marian Hossa to say.
Yeah. I want to make a point here is that, like, he's not just getting the Hall of Fame here for his NHL work, because this is the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's also arguably one of, if not the greatest Slovakian hockey players of all time, and, like, his international work shows that. Like, he was more than a point per game in both the Olympics and the World's Junior Classic. Like, he put in a lot of work during, like, the peak years of Slovakia, and, like, it was him, Chara, and Marian Gaborik lifting that team.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they vote on this, but I did see on the NHL Network that he was the four-time Slovakian Player of the Year during his career.
Yeah, and that, again, that's a career that overlaps entirely with one of the best defensemen of all time in Zdeno Chara.
Mm-hmm. And they have a category on the Hockey Reference website for players born by country, but it's born in Czechoslovakia because all those players were born before those countries split into two. So, like, there's some other names on here that I don't think played for the Slovakian teams. They played for the Czech teams. Like, Jager was always on the Czech Republic teams, right?
Yeah, Jager is Czech.
Yeah, so yeah, again, and not only that, but, yeah, Hossa's international performance. Like, he was productive everywhere he went. He was productive. He was awesome in Ottawa. He was awesome in Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Detroit, and then ending up in Chicago and then playing all his international appearances. I think he was also tore it up for the Portland Winterhawks way back in the day. Yeah, in the WHL, in the 97-98 season, he had 85 points in 53 games. So, yeah, Marian Hossa was good wherever he went. I'm sure his castle in Slovakia, he's doing great things there as well.
Shout out to Team Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, Team Europe in the World Cup. He had 6 games, 1 goal. There you go.
Yeah.
And 4 penalty minutes. I'm sure.
Mission accomplished.
I'm sure both of those calls were wrong. Well, what about just any favorite moments you guys had? I mean, the obvious one that jumps out is the Game 5 goal against Nashville, which I think everyone starts with there, but what are some other maybe more subtle or some other lesser known Marian Hossa moments that stand out to you guys?
The pickpocketing with Pavel Datsyuk.
Oh yeah,
that was just like a very, like, these two are clearly the best at what they do and they just did it to each other, and that's just like something you don't see in hockey all that often.
No, because I feel like I don't know if I want to say the majority, but a lot of hockey players, you get the puck stolen from you once, you're going to give up on the play, or you're certainly not going to back check as hard as Hossa would. I think part of it was when Hossa turned around and saw it was Datsyuk, it was like, oh, this motherfucker, I got to go get this puck back.
Yeah.
Shepard, what about you? Any go-tos for you?
So the moment that sticks out to me is not even an on-ice moment. It's an off-the-ice moment. It's a 1,000th game ceremony. And this is my profile picture on secondcityhockey.com. When his daughter boops his nose. that's always what stood out to me about Marian Hossa, is that sense of humor and, like, closest to his family.
Yeah, that's, like, top 5 most adorable sports moments, I think, that have ever happened.
Also, yeah. Eating pierogi out of the cup.
Yes.
I feel like you can't get more Marian Hossa than that.
So as we're talking here, I wanted to find out there's a particular play that always stands out to me for Hossa, and it's the Ben Smith overtime goal in 2011, game 6 against the Canucks that forced game 7. And Ben Smith scores a goal, but the entire play is made because Marian Hossa wins a battle for the puck in the neutral zone and then establishes possession in the offensive zone. He fights off like 2 or 3 checkers. He's holding the puck with one hand on a stick and maintaining possession while fighting guys off with his other hand. He has the puck for about 10 to 11 seconds, which is, I think, the epitome of the "it's Marian Hossa's puck and you can't have it" mode that we saw so many times throughout his career. But so he controls the puck for 10 to 11 seconds, all in one time, which there's guys that probably don't have the puck on their stick for 10 seconds in an entire game. But at the end of it, he throws it out to the point to Hjalmarsson, who gets a shot on net. There's a rebound. There's Ben Smith. Game over. And that, I think, is one of the – that's like the epitome of Marian Hossa for me, in that he wins a 50-50 battle in the neutral zone. And you could probably chalk it up as a takeaway. Then he just owns the puck for 10 seconds because he wants to and nobody else can take it off of him. And then the Hawks score because of it. And I think he gets the secondary assist on this goal. So it may not be, you know, he was never, during his time in Chicago, at least, he was never like the number one star on the team. It seemed like it was always like Taves or Kane or Duncan Keith. But I, like, Marian Hossa was always one of the most vital parts of the team because he did all the dirty work that allowed Taves and Kane and other guys to, especially Kane, I'd say. Marian Hossa's defensive ability is what allowed Patrick Kane's line to go off and do its own thing.
And, like, again, you mentioned Brandon Saad, that, like, legacy that lives on of Hossa teaching, like, the next guy. And even if Saad's not doing, like, the same amount of production, like, that same defensive prowess remains on the team because of Hossa.
Yeah, like, for the longest time, Brandon Saad was called Baby Hossa. I don't think he's going to quite get to that level in his career, unfortunately, which, I mean, is anybody going to get to that level in their career? He's Marion freaking
Mark. Hill. Again, Mark Stone is like the closest representation to Marion Hosa we have in the game now.
Yeah, but.
And it's really, really hard to beat Mark Stone.
But anyway, yeah. Like Marion Hosa's mark on this team and this franchise will be felt for years. And I just personally, I think it's hilarious that he's still on somebody's salary cap payroll and we're talking about him in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, didn't we do the same thing with Pronger though? And it was the same team.
That's true. Well, yeah, there's obviously one team that's really good at this, or the one team that's the popular destination for the salary cap circumvention route. The Arizona Coyotes do have a hell of a roster, though, man. I mean, you've got Chris Pronger, you've got Marion Hossa. Isn't if you start a season in NHL 20, those guys are on the team?
No, I don't think anymore. I think like in like 20 in like NHL 17, you might have had that team.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think Pronger's not there anymore because he's not showing up on their cap friendly page, but Marion Hossa still is. For
so, do you guys remember Hossa as number 18 or number 81?
81.
Okay.
Undoubtedly. Like, I feel like when he played the first half of his career, like, I obviously got more into hockey during the back half of the 2000s and then especially in the 2010s when Hossa was already in Chicago. But I felt like he was always kind of an under-the-radar guy because the Ottawa Senators had some decent teams but were never that great. I mean, when he went to Atlanta, first off, that was right out of the lockout. So it was like hockey didn't exist in some parts of the world at that point. But it felt like he was always kind of an unknown thing. And then he got to Pittsburgh, and then they went to the Cup. And then that summer, the free agency thing, and he signed the one-year deal with Detroit. And then coming to the Blackhawks the year after that, like it was a big I think he's when he started registering on more radars once he got into Pittsburgh and he got more playoff exposure. Because while he was playing with Ottawa, I don't know how. I take it back. They did make the playoffs.
He dragged them to like he accomplished the same feat as Erik Karlsson by dragging the Ottawa Senators to the Eastern Conference Final.
Yeah, in 2003, they went to the Conference Final and lost in 7 games to the Devils. So yeah, I mean, and that's one of the names that they were talking about actually. So that was Daniel Alfredsson is a name that comes up a lot as a guy. When they were talking about snubs from this year's Hall of Fame class, that team, and it's got some of the names that there's a lot of connections to Hossa. First off, there's Zdeno Chara on this team, so a fellow countryman. It's got Martin Hvalat on this Ottawa Senators team, who was the player the Blackhawks decided to not re-sign to keep Marion Hossa instead. But
I don't know. Hossa was the leading scorer on that team, too.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but yeah, there were. It felt like once Hossa became. Is the back half of the 2000s with this Pittsburgh and Detroit and then in Chicago. And that's when like Hossa, I guess that's when he more registered on my personal radar. I felt like when you were playing in Ottawa and Atlanta, that's in the Eastern Conference and it's the Hawks didn't play them a ton. So I didn't really know who he was until like the year he came to Pittsburgh. And then when the Hawks signed him, that was one of those, like your phone just explodes from 19 text messages from people just saying like it's like the equivalent of the Bears when they traded for Khalil Mack. It's like now you know they're serious about winning.
Yeah,
I'm trying to find more things to say about Marion Hossa, but I'm starting to run in short supply. I mean, it's fun to see a player from that era now get the Hall of Fame credential. It's also a little bit sad because it's another reminder that era is kind of in our rearview mirror. I'm sure there's many more coming over the next decade. At least 4 more, I think, at a very minimum. Oh, I say 3 at a minimum.
Yes, I was going to say, who's your 4th?
I'd say 3 is the minimum. Like, Taves, Kane, and Keith, I assume we're all going to the Hall of Fame. And then Brent Seabrook, like you were talking about, Shepard, with Kevin Lowe getting in.
Maybe. Kevin Lowe opens the door for Brent Seabrook, yeah.
Like, although they
the
didn't.
And the goaltender door is very hard to get through.
Yeah.
So we will see on Corey.
Yeah, and they did win 6 cups in Edmonton, and the Hawks got 3. So,
yeah.
What about Scott Foster?
Modern day equivalent.
Shut up, Brandon. God damn.
The modern day equivalent of the 6 cups in Edmonton is 3 cups in Chicago. To be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I feel like Seabrook would be. I would be surprised, but you never know.
And I mean, if he does get it, it's because of one goal. And that's the 2013 Game 7.
Well, like, and 19 other postseason overtime goals. Anytime the Hawks needed a clutch overtime goal, Brent Seabrook scored it. So,
did you guys know that there are number 81 Hossa jerseys for the Coyotes?
Really? I'd buy – if I was –
It's because his brother played 14 games there in 2007.
Oh, Marcel Hossa way back in the day?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The Red Wings tweeted a picture of Marian Hossa in Red Wings gear saying congrats on your Hall of Fame induction. And it just looks weird to see Hossa in a Red Wings uniform.
Yeah.
Did Pittsburgh do it?
I have not seen if the Penguins did it. I feel like he has probably a better reputation in Pittsburgh because, like, he took them to the final. They did tweet out a congratulations. It's to Penguins alumni, Jerome Iginla and Marian Hossa. But they didn't tweet out a picture like the Red Wings did. I forgot Iginla played with the Penguins, too. I thought Iginla was going to win a cup with the Hawks at some point. I really thought, like, he was going to get the Ray Bourque treatment, but come to Chicago. But I can't remember which season it would have been where the Hawks would have added him and where he would have fit and all that. But that would have been pretty cool.
I think 2015.
Cool. Yeah.
2015, right? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I really thought that was the year that that Iginla was going to get the 2010 Marian Hossa treatment, but it was going to be at the very end of his career because I think that was the year he retired.
No, he kept going. He went for a long time because he went to, like, Colorado and then out Los Angeles.
Iginla played for freaking ever, man. Like, he was the cover of, like, NHL 06 or 07, and he was so damn good with the Flames. He was so damn annoying to watch because he was so tough to play against that he was annoying as a fan of the other team. But he went all over the place at the end of his career. I forgot he played with the Kings.
Yeah. I mean, it was a short run, but he played with the Kings.
Yeah. So while we're here, Jerome Iginla, obviously amazing talent, clear first ballot Hall of Famer. Anybody, any thoughts on any of the other guys? We'll get to Doug Wilson on the in a little bit, but any Ken Holland thoughts or Kim St. Pierre or Kevin Lowe thoughts? Not Kevin Love. Kevin Lowe. Kevin Love. Kevin Love is not going into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That'd be a neat trick if he pulled it off.
It'd be fantastic. Yeah. Just retires from NBA right now and joins the NHL for no reason. Maybe exactly. Come up, make less money. Yeah, again, Kevin Lowe is – it makes no sense him going in before Alexander Mogilny. But it does open – I think it opens the door a lot more for Brent Seabrook.
Yeah, I mean that'll be interesting to watch as time goes on, because you know we're still several years from, like, Taves and Kane have many, I wouldn't say, maybe not many, but multiple years left of their career. Keith and Seabrook, well, Seabrook probably be the first one to retire given all the injuries and surgeries he's had. Keith, I assume, would retire next, although he might just play hockey forever because he seems like he has the ability to do so. But I mean, I'm sure we're at least a good 5-10 years away before we're talking about Hall of Fame inductions for either of those guys. Really quickly, just out of curiosity, what do you guys think? Is Marian Hossa's number getting retired in Chicago?
It has to be now. He's a Hall of Famer.
I think
there's going to be more numbers in the rafter from this era than there are going to be players in the Hall of Fame. So I think it is. I think Hossa's 81 has to go up there.
Brandon, what about you?
I think that there only should be three numbers retired, and that's Taves, Kane, and Keith. And then you do, like, a ring of honor for the other ones. But I also think, like, retiring numbers is, like, kind of a weird deal anyway. But
I mean, you can make a ring of honor, Shepard. Just because they don't have one doesn't mean they can't come up with one.
And just make one with
– I think they'll retire Hossa's number. I feel like it's – a combination of how good he was and how beloved he was as a player. Because I think one of the most fun things about Marian Hossa was the social media discussion around him and just him being immortal and a demigod and just all of those things. But yeah, Marian Hossa was just so much fun. Everything on social media was great. And it was just a blast. And I'm sad it's over. I'm probably going to be watching a lot of Marian Hossa highlights on YouTube and TV and wherever else I can find them tonight. And that'll be a good night. I'm already looking forward to it. It sounds like a great evening for me. But Marian Hossa was not the only member of the Blackhawks to be inducted into the Hall of Fame today. And when we come back on the other side of this timeout, we're going to talk about the other guy, which is former defenseman and current San Jose Sharks general manager, Doug Wilson. And we'll do that right after this break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison, and as we promised before the break, we're going to talk about Doug Wilson a little bit. Now, this is going to be a little bit more difficult for the three of us because I was, as the veteran of this group, I was just about 4 or 5 years old when Doug Wilson played his last game with the Blackhawks, so that makes things a little bit more challenging for me. Brandon, you were in 1990, I was 4 years old when he was traded to San Jose by Chicago for Kerry Toporowski, I can't even say that name, and San Jose's second-round pick, which became future Blackhawk Boris Mironov, fun fact. But yeah, so the Blackhawks traded away Doug Wilson on September 6, 1991. Brandon Kane, how old were you?
Well, I was born on New Year's Day in 91.
What'd you say, Brandon?
I was born on New Year's Day in 91.
Okay, so you were 8 months old. And Shepard was not born yet. So
I was negative like 4.
Okay. So this is going to be a little more difficult for us because obviously none of us saw him play live. We were talking about this before we came on the air. The way I always remember Doug Wilson is that whenever Duncan Keith's Norris Trophy candidacy would come up, then they'd always reference the other players in franchise history that won a Norris Trophy. And that was always Chelios, Doug Wilson, and Pierre Palat. So that's my main memory of Doug Wilson. He was chronicled in a former Blackhawk of the Week article we wrote March of 2018, and I was rereading that as a bit of a reminder. And Doug Wilson was basically the prototypical 1980s offensive defenseman. He remains the franchise leader in scoring by a defenseman, right?
Correct.
That is correct. Yeah. Yeah. He played 16 years overall, but 14 of them were with the Blackhawks. See, this is the one thing that drives me insane about Hockey Reference is there was apparently – it happened after the 86 season where the Blackhawks changed their name from two words to one word. So they have all the goals and all the statistics tallied separately for Doug Wilson. He has 9 years with the Chicago Blackhawks. Blackhawks is two words. And then 5 years with Chicago Blackhawks. Blackhawks is one word. So, altogether, he played, if I can do math, played 938 games with Chicago and scored 225 goals and had 779 points. Yep. And he's still the team's leader in points by a defenseman, although I imagine he's got a few guys nipping at his heels, most notably Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. So, Shepard, Brandon, give me all your Doug Wilson memories. Go.
I was negative 4.
All right, good talk. Brandon, what about you?
Yeah, I've just seen, like, old clips and stuff of him, and mm-hmm. It's just like, well, that's a defenseman that could skate and move the puck up the ice, and clearly, as you can see by his scoring totals, that's exactly what he did, and it worked out well because the Blackhawks were good in the 80s but not great.
Yeah, like the teams that they didn't make the cup until the 91-92 season, which Wilson was traded right at the start of that season to the expansion San Jose Sharks. And then I guess he liked it so much in San Jose that he decided to become the team's general manager. But his peak season was 1981-1982 when he scored 39 goals, had 46 assists. Both of those numbers still records and still single season records for Blackhawks defensemen. He was an all-star that year. That was the season he won the Norris Trophy. And I guess the other notable thing about Doug Wilson is that He played 16 seasons, and he never wore a helmet.
Huh.
Because he got in – he debuted in the 78-79 season. It was in the 1979-1980 season where they made helmets mandatory, but they grandfathered in any players who played before that that didn't want to wear a helmet. And Doug Wilson played into the 90s, and he was part of that grandfather clause, so he never wore a helmet.
So he like,
I would love
like
to know the last player who didn't wear one.
Craig McTavish.
Really?
Yeah.
Good old Craig.
Future Edmonton Oilers coach.
And GM. So apparently guys who don't like to wear helmets become GMs.
Craig McTavish, who retired in 1997, was the last NHL player to suit up in a game without a helmet. That is verbatim from the former Blackhawk of the Week article I wrote. Thanks for reading,
Brandon. I've seen that now. It's been a while,
Just scroll down to the damn story I wrote. Thanks, Brandon. I appreciate that.
Hey, it's linked in there.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the Blackhawks' all-time career leaders for just everything. And so Doug Wilson was ninth with 938 games. He's not on the goal list. I don't see him. He is fourth all-time with 554 assists. Patrick Kane's passed him up. For points, he is seventh all-time with 779 points. Duncan Keith is way behind him in 10th at 610. So I think Doug Wilson's spots are pretty solidified there. I don't think anybody's going to be catching him anytime soon.
I mean, maybe. There is somebody wearing 27 who might be the best offensive defenseman the Blackhawks have had in a long time.
Because Doug Wilson scored 225 goals as a defenseman, so Boquist better hurry up.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I shouldn't say hurry up. He's still 19 years old. He's got plenty of time, but he has a lot of goals to catch him. Keith's at 101, Seabrook's at 103. Granted, Boquist is by far the most offensive oriented of those three players, but I don't know. 225 goals is a lot of damn goals. And Wilson played in an era where defensemen could score 40 goals in a season.
The thing about Duncan Keith also has always been like, he's never been a fantastic goal scorer. Like there, I remember like a season he came like dangerously close to scoring zero goals.
And he's like the second. It was either the last game of the year or the second last game of the year. He scored a goal that beat St. Louis, and I think was responsible for knocking St. Louis out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, he's never been fantastic at it, which is why like all the crucial goals have come from Brent Seabrook.
So what you guys are telling me is you don't have any more Doug Wilson takes, do you?
he'll always be like you said, he'll probably always have a place in the Blackhawks record book, even if Adam Boquist comes out of nowhere and just turns it on.
Yeah, I think just on pure goals and points, he will probably forever be the most offensively productive defenseman the Blackhawks have ever had. Which is nothing to sleep on. And obviously worthy of a Hall of Fame credentials because he was part of the class that was inducted today.
Yep. I mean, it gets you it, being one of the best defensemen for an original six team probably does get you into the Hall of Fame and probably should.
Exactly.
Also kind of weird time. The guy who wore number 24 waited 24 years to get into the Hall of Fame.
There we go. Perfect. So Martin Havlat's got what? Another 20 some years to wait.
Yep.
Of course, we're going to go back to Marian Hossa for a second here, but just going back that 02-03 Senators team, it's crazy to look at that and realize that this was 2003 and some of the names on that team. Because not only do you have Marian Hossa at 24 years old, but like Martin Havlat at the age of 21, Zdeno Chara at 25. Like, that feels like it was a lifetime ago, but Zdeno Chara is still there on the roster. And he was 25 at that point. Like, I thought Chara would have been, like, 19 or 20. No, he was already a full-grown adult male, and he's still freaking playing 17 years later. That's impressive.
A full-grown adult at, like, 16.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
When your best asset is your size, you probably don't have to stop playing hockey until you're very old.
Yeah. Oh, God, man. 19-year-old Jason Spezza. Yeah, damn. That was... And future Blackhawks, Patrick Laine and Brian Smolinski on the team.
Oh, awesome.
And Dennis Bonvy and Ray Emery. God, this is some fun. So, yeah, I think that's all for our I think that'll end the Doug Wilson segment. I apologize to any of the more veteran Blackhawks fans listening to this podcast. We can tell you he's an offensive defenseman, and he had a hell of a slap shot. Was probably awesome on the Blackhawks power play, but yeah, it's kind of tough to say much else about Doug Wilson because I didn't go to a Blackhawks game until 1996, and that's when I got into hockey, and Doug Wilson had already retired at that point. So you might as well ask me to talk about Pierre Palat's playing because I would know just as little about him as I would about, well, all right, maybe a little bit, but you get the point.
I didn't watch hockey until 2012, 2013. So he is 40 years removed from me.
So if you got into hockey then, when did you find out that Doug Wilson was a former Blackhawk? When did you make that connection?
Reading the 100 Greatest Players book by Greg Wyshynski and Sean McIndoe and Dave Lozo.
Okay. He's in the 100 Greatest Players of All Time book. Where's Jonathan Toews? So. Where's Jonathan Toews on that list?
108. He's around like Henry Richard.
I figured Dave Lozo wrote it, so he probably left Toews off the list because it seems like when the
Toews is an honorable mention.
Okay, it feels like the time I spent briefly listening to that podcast, Dave Lozo was always shit talking Jonathan Toews, which seemed like it was when Toews was at his in like the 16, the 17, and 18 seasons when he was kind of in his valley between before he resurged in the last 2 to 3 seasons. So
yeah.
Also, just it was weird seeing Ken Holland get introduced because you forget, like, he – like, the way the Red Wings are right now, obviously not
– it's kind of his fault.
Yeah. But he was also part of what was a pretty damn good dynasty for 15 years there in the late 90s and 2000s, and which was promptly ended by Brent Seabrook in 2013.
I mean, they wasn't like it wasn't over because they made the playoffs for 25 years in a row. And
yeah,
so they had to make
but
playoffs after
I mean,
that,
for all intents and purposes, Brent Seabrook did that shit. So
yes,
it was what actually happened is when Marian Hossa decided to sign with Chicago instead of Detroit. That was the end of those Red Wings teams. Because then it was Pavel, it was Datsyuk and Zetterberg and a lot of guys at the end of their career and a bunch of young players who aren't
turned out not to be that great.
Yeah, that. They weren't going to replace the Russian Five, so. But yeah.
If you're ever interested in learning about the collapse of Detroit, there's a pretty awesome YouTube video on SB Nation's main YouTube channel in the collapse video playlist that details the rise and the utter collapse of Detroit. So check that out.
There you go. And with that, I think we are at a perfect spot to wrap up this here episode of Musings on Madison. First time we've ever had a chance to talk about Hall of Famers. You know what, really quickly before I forget, before we walk away from all this, Shepard, you said this was your first like guy that you watched his career and then you saw him in the Hall of Fame. Brandon, who is yours? Because I feel like we might have the same one.
A Blackhawks player or just in general?
Just in general.
Oh, Forsberg.
Okay, because I was going.
Forsberg was my guy.
Okay, yeah, that's. I was going to go off the board and go to a different sport, and I was going to say either Urlacher or Frank Thomas. Well, I guess because Frank Thomas isn't as much because I think his prime was, absolute prime was like early mid '90s, and I was still pretty young then. Like I remember Urlacher being drafted, and putting him into video games like, why the hell is this safety playing linebacker? I was wrong on that. But, Urlacher was the first guy I remember, like, them drafting him, watching his entire career, and then seeing him go into the Hall of Fame. And that was one of the sharpest reminders that I am no longer a child.
Yeah, well, when we get Patrick Manley in the Hall of Fame, then we can talk about Bears.
Yeah, Jesus. All right, well, we're going to start talking about long snappers. We better wrap this shit up. So, yeah, I think let's do that. Thank you very much for listening to this special edition of Musings on Madison. Hopefully, we'll have more Hall of Famers to talk about in the future. And you never know, maybe in a couple weeks here, we might actually have real-life, actual hockey to talk about. Fingers crossed with the way some things are going in some states in the U.S. hasn't exactly been encouraging, but we're gonna hold out hope that there's some hockey coming up the next month or so. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Stay tuned to Second City Hockey. I'm sure we'll have more talking about either Marian Hossa or Doug Wilson or Hall of Fame candidates in general. We're starting to put together our recap of the regular season for the 2019-2020 Chicago Blackhawks. And so we can remind you of this team that we watched for like 5-6 months and then forgot about in the last 3 months and then might be watching again next month. And then we can start talking about their potential playoff matchup with the Edmonton Oilers. And hopefully we all get to do that. So fingers crossed for that. But we hope you're all staying safe, staying healthy. Wear a mask, please, so we can watch hockey. I think that's just wear a mask and we can watch hockey. For Brandon, for Shepard, I'm Dave. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. And go Hawks!
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.